very good. Thursday, race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to us on line. What did I just say? Sirius 201. I'm looking at the PPs for Saturday at Belmont. Let's try this again. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to us on Sirius XM Online, and at our website, stevebeck.com. We're having a very funny, I find it amusing that conversation, I put up PPs, the Kona Gold PPs, and they're very interesting, and they're being, you know, they're being discussed and debated, and there's a few things that have come up out of it. I'll get back to this. In fact, maybe we'll get Chuck in here, because Chuck's brought up some interesting, Simon's brought up a couple of interesting points. But before I do that, let's catch up on what happened officially later in the morning, and actually one case, what came to Epicenter around 11 o'clock yesterday while we were on the air. The official word came that Epicenter, a go for Preakness. And of course we talked to Steve Asmussen on Tuesday, and you know, he was open, and then became more than open. He was positively upbeat and impressed and pleased with the way in which Epicenter galloped, and the energy shown, and all the temperature taking, literal and figurative, when it comes to deciding about running. 2 weeks after Derby, and Epicenter, and virtual certainty now that also that Secret Oath is running. I mean, it would now be an upset if she didn't come. So the intrigue, and it, I think we can characterize it at this point. The intrigue has ratcheted up for Preakness. I mean, usually post-Derby, you get that initial expectation and potential, and then it the air comes out of the balloon a little bit, and you lose a few horses, including Derby runners, and then you might get a couple jumping in that we're considering, but generally, we lose horses. We don't add them the way we seem to be going right now. And, there's still some decisions pending. But if this is the way it lines up, and that article that Marty McGee wrote, that, in fact, Jay Pribman, if you're listening to the replay, Jay had prefaced and had hinted that Marty's piece was going to have some, not necessarily revelations, but some interesting elements of the way Preakness is coming together. And that includes Keith Fustel and his morning line, because quite fairly, Epicenter, early voting, Secret Oath, Rich Strike, and Simplification. If starting with those five, and of course there would also been, there's also Chad Brown that's lurking as well. That has to officially rule. Zandon as well. We'll see. But if that's the group, even without Zandon, if that's the group that winds up a week from Saturday in Baltimore, then we're in for a real treat. This will be quite good. And the other participants we haven't even mentioned, Creative Minister, out of the Nice Allowance performance for McPeak. McPeak's also got to make official determination on what sure seems like Rattle and Roll's going, right? He also had Smile Happy that was appending. There's Safi Joseph absolutely going with Skippy Longstocking, Unoho, and Ricky Corville after having to miss. Everybody's talked about Ethereal Road and Dwayne Lucas making that decision to come out, but of course, Unoho's departure from the Derby was a significant portion of Rich Strike's ability to get in. This will be a fun group. Epicenter and Secret O definitely enhanced the anticipation. Rich Strike, Epicenter, Secret Oath, Simplification, Early Voting, Creative Minister, Rattle and Roll, Skippy Longstocking, Unoho, that Shake 'em Loose from Sanchez Salomon, probably end up in the Murphy, but they're considering. So, this is all right. Looking okay. Few things beyond Preakness anticipation, and as Jay mentioned, they'll draw the Friday card on Sunday and then the Preakness card on Monday. So once again, we'll have the whole weekend ready for examination, handicapping, and some decision making and ticket forming by Monday evening. Very cool. We like it. Yeah, it's one of the real positives that's come out of the recent changes from the racing office, the Breeders' Cup, and all these big cards, giving everybody more time to peruse. Standard draw though yesterday. For Saturday's action, and there's actually a few things, and we may actually touch on a little bit today. The additions, we're at that point in spring where summer racing venues are getting going. Presque Isle starts next week. We got to talk about, and probably get Todd Mosteller in about that. Andrew Offerman, we got to reach for Canterbury, and I saw that the first couple of cards, let me go back, I think are ready at Prairie Meadows as well. Did I not see that? I think I did. Yeah, Prairie Meadows. Ready to go. Starts Friday, tomorrow. So they got the first four cards done. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So I want to slip that in too. All right. So we've got. and in the great magic of interactivity, Woodbury Payne is writing to know if Bill Gallo is going to be on today, and my anticipation is yes, that Bill Gallo will join us. In fact, even potentially in this next hour, there Woodbury is on his way to Nashville. Keep your eyes on the road, Woodbury. I hope you didn't type this. I hope you used the hands-free method. He's on his way, of course, to Steward the action at Percy Warner, the Iroquois, that is Saturday, and that Sean Clancy will browbeat me about not being able to go. Speaking of Clancy's, there will be a Clancy today. It is Thursday. We'll have Joe Clancy, who yesterday was named as this year's recipient of the Old Hilltop Award. And having mentioned Joe last week and his Preakness piece in the Mid-Atlantic magazine, his piece about Del Carroll and BBB. So Joe Clancy today, and we will have plenty of anticipation of the Grade 1 Iroquois this weekend. And if you're in the area, if you're in the Nashville vicinity, and you've not been, I don't know what the, I suppose that some of the more premium options are unavailable, but Snap Decision heads, and I can't remember if I think we did mention it with Tom Law last week, or maybe it was Sean the week before. No Mean Queen, and she missed that tune-up in the point-to-point, and then she's dealing with a little something, apparently, and Carrie Breon having to miss the Iroquois, which had been the Mean Queen's target. But Snap Decision is there, and set for Jack Fisher with Graham Waters, and you got Ranistan for Breon, and Moscato, also, of course, Jack Fisher. Good old Brian Bakes Cookies, who's gone from the flat to the jump set. Hampshire Historic Heart for Kerry Breon as well, and Pistol Whip for Nikki Henderson is the Grade 1. They got a nice card ready for Saturday at Nashville. So, in New York, started to reference the weekend in New York, you've got five graded stakes, and the Man of War, which is going to include Yabir, coming back again to North America. And it's interesting, Naira opting this weekend, Saturday, they're going to do a cross-country, but the cross-country really doesn't leave New York. They're using all five graded stakes as the cross-country pick five Saturday. So we'll do that with Nick Tamaro tomorrow, and the five graded stakes in order, the third, the fifth, the eighth, ninth, tenth. The Vagrancy, of course, the filly and mare. Sprint Standard, then the Run Happy, and this made me laugh, the Diablo, which became a Grade 3, the Diablo has been renamed the Run Happy. And so I'm not sure if Run Happy is sponsoring the Run Happy, but of course if they are, well then it becomes the Run Happy, Run Happy. Right? You can't beat this for top flight radio amusement. Yeah, the Run Happy, Run Happy. The Man of War goes as the eighth with Yabir Gaffo lining up against, as well as Aban. Graham has got Easter in here, the French bread, and he's also got Highland Chief for Mrs. Hay. And Napalm Chatterpaw is offering up So High. So six pack for the Man of War, the Grade 1. The Grade 3, Peter Pan, is quite an unusual gathering, actually. The race drew eight, and it's just a different bunch. How about Richard Mandela showing up with the LNJ Foxwoods homebred? The Malibu Moon Colt set sail. Recent maiden winner, and a nice maiden winner, going a mile at Santa Anita. And he turns up here, draws the rail. Rosario, as we say, sees fit to ride. Let Ron Anderson do the handicapping for you. Chad's got Electability, who followed up the March Maiden win at Aqueduct, came back and won an allowance. This is a quality road that, a gelding that you may, you know, not have noticed late in the season at Aqueduct, but Electability for Seth Klarman. Todd has got the recent maiden winner, Complete Agenda, in here. This is Rapoli and Viola, a Curlin colt that took five starts to break the maiden, but had made steady progress and did it at a mile and an eighth. We the People shows up in here. Very interesting. This is the Constitution colt that was just an absolute talking horse back in February for Rudy Brissett. Remember? Yeah, we kind of lost sight of him after the Arkansas Derby try, which, you know, he was trying to pull a Taba and you know, jump from allowance and maiden company right into grade one deep waters, and he was 5-2, you may have forgotten, in Cyberknife's Arkansas Derby win. So, We the People shows up. Has been very quietly and steadily working at Keeneland for this. Golden Glider, who we've been hinting at and mentioning regularly for Mark Cassie. Cassie told you that he was taking, Golden Glider was taking the Sir Winston route toward the Belmont Stakes. So the Ghost Zapper colt for Gary Barber and for the Conrads. Golden Glider in here. Dylan Davis picks up the mount. Pratt, by the way, rides back out of the Arkansas Derby for Brissett and for Windstar. Sienna Farm and the Commonwealth fractional team, fractional ownership group involved in We the People. So Pratt, Jose Ortiz on Complete Agenda, by the way, and Irad on Electability. Western River, the other Rudy Brissett, and this is a horse that kind of got lost in the mix. And I, last time we talked to Rudy, you'll recall, brought up Western River, who had broken the maiden on the undercard, the Arkansas Derby undercard. And I thought it was really impressive that day. So very much like Complete Agenda, the Pletcher Viola Rapoli, five starts to break the maiden and, you know, really made quantum progress, you know, later in the spring. And that's not, you know, that's not unusual. This is a Tappet colt. And in fact, just glancing and seeing that dam, and I'm going to forget now, but isn't that the family? I think that's the family of, isn't that a Winchell family? Right, Morena, the Peruvian mayor. All right, now I've got to look this up because I can't remember top of my head about Western River. Sort of. That's right. This is the full brother of Creator. There you go. There's the family tie. So it sure feels like Western River is on a Belmont path, right? Broke the maiden at a mile and a 16th and stretches out to the mile and an eighth here. Cook Creek, Jerry O'Dwyer shows up, puts the blinkers on this Uncle Mo for Everett Dobson, Cheyenne Stable. And of course, Dobson came up the other morning with Rick Dawson. So Cook Creek, who tried the Withers after placing, and he's multiple stake placed. He was second in the Nashua, going back to November, then third in the Jerome. So he's multiple stake placed. The Withers did not go well, and it looks like O'Dwyer has kind of regrouped. So he shows up, Cook Creek, back to New York, and State Planning is the eighth of eight for Juan Vasquez, who may finally have cooled down in New York. Sent out three so far. He hasn't won a Belmont over the winter, everything he sent to New York was winning. It was unbelievable. This is also a horse that's kind of New York bred, actually, that's put things together. Sugar Maple, actually, bred. It was a $25,000 Keeneland yearling. And I'm going to guess that State Planning, who I'm really not that familiar with, but I'm going to guess that this is a, because of Sugar Maple, that this is a Nehrud, very well could be a Nehrud family. And wow, this is a really unusual. Okay, that would not be. I got the dam. Two Susans is the dam, and let's just take a peek at this. A purge dam, and not a lot of hints looking there. So all right, I will do some research. Actually, the dam happens to be a half to a couple of nice, a few nice horses, including Ava Kay. Remember Ava Kay? She was nice. Ava Kay, nice New York bred, and also Skyway, who I'm vaguely recalling. Sky Mesa Colt, the one, the best pal, Skyway. So the dam, there's two Susans. Okay, State Planning. Trevor McCarthy, who rode this one to a maiden victory in March and then came back weeks later in the allowance win. So kind of an offbeat assembly, and you know, a bunch of horses that have been running 80 buyers, more or less. It's not a bad group. Peter Pan, the traditional prep for the Belmont Stakes, right? All right. The Bogey also on Saturday, and you got nice, actually a nice group of fillies and mares for the Bogey. Chad with the return of Regier for Peter Brandt and Michael Tabor, last seen in the Breeders' Cup, was 14-1 in the filly and mare turf, making a seasonal debut at 4. So you got to figure she's ready. And also making the seasonal debut is Lamista, who you last saw in the Beverly D. So she comes back as a 5-year-old in here. Plum Alley as well for Christophe, the first Samurai filly for Michael Dubb. And partners. Well, it's Tony Dutrow. Mrs. Weber, nice to see our flash drive back, the Ghost Zapper filly. Stolen Holiday for Shug. And Larry Goichman's got his New York bred Runaway Rumor as well. Tony's got high opinion for Woodford and his team D. So it's a nice day of racing. There's a good allowance that ends the card. State bred fillies. We'll probably do races 3 through 11 myself. I did do the pick 6 carryover today, and I'm struggling with one of the races. The 6th race is tormenting me here today. So that's that. That's the second division of the maidens. So I've got to make a final determination there, but everything else, and then put a ticket together. All right, so we'll do that, and we'll probably see if Rich Ang's got any thoughts about the sequence when we talk to Rich later. The rest of the schedule, by the way, what else? We told you about, where did I put the schedule? Yikes. I have no idea now. How about this? No. We've got to cancel the show. I can't tell you what. Oh, Tony. We got to talk to Tony, right? We got to talk to Tony Black. And yeah, Tony's impressions. I'm sure he's got a few thoughts about Sonny Leone's magic on Saturday in Derby. I don't know if you saw the. Did you see the report? I guess the Ohio stewards, right, handed down a few days for for Sonny Leone. A little careless out there. He's actually serving some days. Maybe that worked into why he took those vacation days and went away after Derby for a few days, because he knew that, I suppose, that Jeff Perrin knew that he was going to get a few days from the stewards. I did see an article that turned up on national. It was on, I think it was on the Yahoo front page. Derby winning jock suspended. Okay, folks, let's not get carried away. It's just days for. I didn't see the ride. I should pull up the race. I guess he sawed somebody off on the rail. All that's going to do among horse players, that's just going to make people admire him more. For those of us that appreciate a rider that tried to shut off somebody coming up inside him. Tony, you know, that's Tony Black's. That's Tony Black's famous line. I left him plenty of room, Judge. The horse was just too fat. I love it. I hope Tony's listening. I'll know right away if he is, because that's his favorite. His favorite explanation to the judges as to why, you know, why he cut that guy off coming up the rail. And you know, speaking, by the way, of the that New York sequence today, 53,000 in the carryover pool, and this should, you know, given that it's, you know, first day of racing coming back, I gotta have to think that this thing draws probably, got it, 3.5 times at least, right? 150, 200,000, maybe a little bit more. This might end up in the $300,000 range today. And there's an unusual situation that I sent a text to our friend and one of our partners, Avi Friedberg, who many of you know and have seen, of course, famously. He's got that jacket-sized set of silks. But in the sixth race today in New York, he's two horses that Avi's everything cricket racing. He's got two horses that he bred that are lining up against each other. It just so happens, and one came from Maryland and got claimed in Maryland, and then brought back to New York. And one was claimed from Avi right in the first start. That Avi, amazing crosstown girl that Bill Morey now has for Bob Bone, 3-1. That's the two. And Dinny's Destiny, that Avi bred out of his very nice Avi's Destiny. This was a Bernardini filly that Linda Rice offered and was grabbed up by our friend Joe Grant and his partners. Dinny's Destiny, 15-1, going turf to dirt. So. Sometimes, you know, you breed them and they get claimed away, or you breed them and you sell them, and then you get the chance to get the breeder awards. Bill Gallo, as promised, I promised that Woodbury, who's driving, and Bill, I had to get you on now because we've got Woodbury captive in his car, driving to Nashville.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing? I'm glad Woodbury's on his way.
Well, you know, shouldn't you, you can't pick him up with the National Steeplechase jet and fly him to Nashville?
Yeah, it's called Southwest Airlines. We had that Steeplechase jet, but anyway, yeah, I'm actually flying out early tomorrow morning, and Woodbury and Larry Curtis are two or three stewards are heading down there via car, so should be a great weekend, a great day. Hopefully the weather holds up. I'm calling for possible showers, but I think it's going to be okay. But it's a great card, six race card, and you know, a monster grade one, which is going to be interesting to say the least. Snap decisions in there. The main queen had a minor setback, you know, something very, very minor in third round. Kind of stopped on it a little bit. I don't think she stopped training, but they're pointing for Saratoga now, probably to Jonathan Shepherd, the second grade one up there. And then on to Belmont for the Lonesome Glory, and then return to Tar Hill. So that's her plan. This race was originally on her schedule. Snap decision. It's a weight parade race. They all carry 158. So with that, he's the highest rated horse in the field, and he should be tough to beat.
Let's run this down. I hit on some of the names, and what's interesting, Nikki Henderson's got that first time North America. What do we know about Pistol Whipped?
He's an 8-year-old. You know, he's been running in England. Nikki Henderson, American people might not be too familiar with him, but he's some of the top trainers over there. They're formidable horsemen. Trained many champion jumpers over there, and this looks like a nice horse. They shipped him over specifically for the grade one. And regular Nikki D. Don Bill, he's going to ride him, regular rider. He's got pretty nice form, for sure. It's sort of always difficult to kind of see how they kind of slide into the American-style racing. Typically, the ones that like the firmer ground over there do better here. The turf at Nashville is pristine. It's very rarely, if ever, hard. It's very irrigated, it's a year-round program. It's very lush turf, so that should help a barn horse for sure. But we'll have to see. I mean, he's going to be up against it. He's a highly rated horse. He's been racing over the bigger fences, and over there there's smaller hurdles and the bigger fences, the steeplechase. And he hasn't raced over a hurdle since, looks like, March of 19. Our fence, the national fence in America, is a little bit of a hybrid. It's kind of in between. It's not a smallish hurdle, and it's certainly not a big steeplechase fence. So it's, that in itself is going to be a little bit different. Typically, the steeplechase horses they jump bigger and bolder. The hurdlers are more efficient going over fences. So that little transition, steeplechase fence back to hurdle fence, it's going to be a little bit of a challenge for him for sure. He's probably going to like the distance, the 3-mile distance. It looks like this horse can run all day long. Nikki Henderson wouldn't send him over. He's not here to stay. He's here to run and go home. So he certainly wouldn't send him if he didn't think he had a good shot. With the absence of the main queen, his chances are going to improve. But Fisher's Fisher's loaded for bear here. He's got Snap Decision and Moscato, his two best horses. And, either one of them can win this for sure. And clearly, Snap Decision kind of stands out. He got beat in his last three, but that doesn't mean he's not a superior horse. He is just that. When he lost to Snap, I ran a stand in his last at Middleburg, which was kind of a prep for Temple Guatemi. For here, that was a handicap, and a significant weight difference between the two, 14 pounds. So that bodes well for Snap Decision at level weights for sure.
In fact, Bill, take a second, and we very frequently touch on the on the weights and on the weight swings, and explain why this is run. This race is being run at level weights with everybody at 158.
It's much like on the flat. I mean, certain races are designated weight parades, Far Hills being another one, premier races, quite frankly. There's a strong feeling that the best horse should win, and the weight should be level, and let that best horse win on paper. Now, as you know, that doesn't always work out. We do handicap the races at Saratoga and Belmont, the grade ones there, and we do that for a specific reason, and that's to entice the largest field possible. You know, when we're racing at Iroquois or at Far Hills, there's betting now, but there hadn't been betting in the past. But field size, as you know, becomes important, and to increase the handle, and we certainly don't want to inhibit handle in New York. So we make them handicaps, and we typically have an 18 or 20 pound spread in the race to try and get the largest field possible. And that's the simple explanation. This is a classic grade one race going 3 miles, and it's been weight parade since its inception, and so has the Far Hills race. So those two kind of stick out as our premier races. But this year, the Far Hills just announced a couple of weeks ago that they're bumping their purse back up, not to the 450,000 level back in 2019, but it's going to be 250,000, which is a significant bump. It's probably going to attract some international horses. I could see Gordon Elliott sending something, and probably maybe even Mickey Henderson, the likes of those. 250 kind of catches the foreign attention, so I wouldn't be surprised if there are 3 or 4 foreign horses at Far Hills in the fall.
Well, and even, you know, when you mentioned we opened the conversation about this with Pistol Whip, 150,000 for the Iroquois is a significant purse. I mean, that's a nice number, and you can see right in the kinds of races Pistol Whip's been involved in, at places like Newbury and Kempton and so forth. Ask it in the fall. This is a big opportunity for a horse like this.
Yeah, and I mean, 150 is kind of the normal number. You know, everything got abnormal with COVID, obviously. So purses did drop from in certain places, and this was 100,000 last year. It had been historically 150. In fact, 3 or 4 years ago, it was 200,000, and they did Willie Mullins actually sent a pair over, and he got beat. They finished second and third, I believe. But 150. Catches some attention from Europe, 200 a little bit more, 250 psychologically, I think that really
magic number.
Exactly, it becomes like the magic number, which is why I'm happy that Far Hills has taken that leap. And you know, they're going to be, I know you've talked to Guy Torsolari, the chairman of that race meet, and they're going to inch their way back up as the crowds return to Far Hills, and they're going to, you know, get to that $1 million mark at some point in the not too near future, which will be great. But this is a great step this year to go to 250. Compliments everything that we're doing in New York with the Smithwick and the Jonathan Shepherd, and then of course the Lonesome Brody in September, either at Belmont or Aqueduct. I'm not sure where they're going to be, but we have a nice Grade One program, and this kind of kicks it off here. This is our premier meet of the spring, and our spring season is kind of winding down. We're going to race here, and then we're going to race at Radnor next week. Normally we race at Bear Hill. We haven't been able to race over this brand new $20 million race course for a variety of reasons. It's not going to happen this spring. Hopefully it's going to happen next spring, which will be great when it does open. I'm staring out my office window right now, looking at the course. It's spectacular, and it's going to have a very bright future. It's taken a while with the 5-star event that they had. They had some issues in the infield arenas, and now they're reconstructing some of those arenas. So once that's tidied up and fixed up, and the crossings are mended, horses out there, and then get some schooling and get some horses galloping and breezing, hopefully from the up in the Fair Hill Training Center, and then we'll be up and going again with the Fair Hill races. Hopefully more than one day a year, possibly two or three. That'll be great.
Nice. And while we're doing some house cleaning too, didn't get a chance last week in the crush of Derby Oaks. We didn't get a chance to mention what was going on at the Plains, and it was Virginia Gold Cup Day last Saturday, and Leslie Young with a very quietly, not that quietly, but Leslie Young off to a terrific start to here in the first quarter, opening quarter of the steeplechase season.
Oh, she's doing great. Her barn is on, just tearing it up. She and Breon are going toe-to-toe. In fact, they won all the races last week, Breon and Leslie Young. They kind of split the cards, which was pretty cool. I don't think that's ever happened. Female trainers have swept an entire card. So that was interesting to see. Weather was an element last week. It was raining. It was very soft. The going, it did compromise some of the results. But overall, it was a heck of a day, and certainly it was a great day for Leslie Young and Carrie Breon. And they're going to probably duke it out right till the end of the year, which will be fun. Jack Fisher is looming large in the background, and don't count him out. He's got a lot of firepower, and as the season progresses, particularly when we get into that major track season, he's particularly strong. I think he's going to have a big day in Nashville on Saturday, and move on from there to the major tracks, obviously Saratoga, Belmont, and the Colonial Downs. As you know, we're racing simultaneously at Colonial, and every Monday, starting with the opening of their meet, and every Wednesday, we have one jump race at Saratoga every Wednesday for seven consecutive weeks. So we've got a very active summer schedule, and we're hoping that we put on a good show at both places.
No doubt. The Virginia Gold Cup, one nice thing about this win by Andiamo, second off of over a year and a half layoff, and now a 12-year-old for Bally Bristol, and that I thought was one of the notable aspects, and also carrying 165 pounds.
Yeah, he's a formidable horse, great timber horse, phenomenal jumper. In fact, the horse is back in. He's at $35,000 timber stake this Saturday at Willowdale, which is in Unionville, Pennsylvania, Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, my neck of the woods. But Andy moves right back in. It's a small field. He intimidated. We originally had eight entries, so we're down to three. Andy moves scared the rest out. But we'll see how he does back to back. He was away for a while. He's real healthy right now, and he was spectacular at the Gold Cup. He loved the soft going. Probably going to get a nice run over on Saturday as well. So great for those older timber horses when they come back and excel.
Nice. Happy to see Leslie do well. The other schedule, you mentioned Radnor coming up next week. There's Winterthur as well, and who else last week? There was quite a bit of action last week, wasn't there?
Oh, it was Gold Cup Saturday, and Winterthur was on Sunday. Yep, we had Sunday. So we go Iroquois Willowdale on this coming Saturday, and then we close it out to the spring at Radnor on the Preakness Day, actually.
There we go. Yep, here's the schedule. Yep.
Speaking of Preakness,
then the flat season.
Yes, speaking of Preakness, not to change the subject, but how about our guy Joe Clancy? Big congratulations to him.
He's coming up later. Yep,
Well, he's one of our people, so I'm always rooting for our people.
Well, and Bill, I appreciate this. I wanted to wanted to be sure to catch up, and I wanted to entertain Woodbury for at least 15 minutes.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad. I'm glad you get to talk to him. He'll give you the inside scoop on all the stewarding issues and steeple chasing.
we're starting to look forward to seeing Wood when we get into the summer schedule, and after this things turn to the flat tracks with Colonial and Saratoga. It's really not far off. Well, Bill Gallo, as always, I appreciate it. NationalSteepleChase.com, the completely revamped NationalSteepleChase.com website, which is terrific, and you can watch the races streaming, and if you can't watch them Saturday live, you can go back and watch them later on, all available there, and should be reminded for Eclipse voters who might want to tune in from the start of the season and follow the campaign. I appreciate it. Safe travel.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Bill Gallo, everybody. There you go. Looking forward, and I'm sure Joe will have some chase conversation as well. We're going to talk, speaking of those ovals that are getting their season going, we're going to talk to Stu Slagle, and he's going to join us next. Case, don't use the cell. Yeah, there. Use the office number instead. All right. Stuart Slagle's going to join us from Prairie Meadows. They're going to kick their season off tomorrow. And for Stu, who had stretch at Woodmine, pretty exciting. And in fact, there's a few things going on at Prairie Meadows for the season. That right, Bobby Newman as well. And we'll see how Stu Slagle is taking to Altoona, Iowa, right? A couple of quick things from yesterday at Horseshoe. Good Samaritan got his first winner right in the opener. That Huntertown romped for Ray Hernandez. Yeah, under Morales. So took all of one starter for Good Samaritan, and the Justify did not. He ended up scratching Prove Right, so we'll watch down the road for him. And then in that other maiden group, it was in fact that Aaron West California Chrome filly, C Chrome. It's a cute name that won under Sammy Bermudez. So there was your maiden races, and then later on. A couple of the other spots that we talked about with John Dooley. How about in that allowance, Lieutenant Junior Grade, Lieutenant JG for Alexis Clare. My dad was a Lieutenant JG in the Coast Guard. He was a Coastie. He had that late maiden race that we talked about, and it was Tom Amos for Woodford with the Into Mischief colt. And actually, he got a decent price. He was like third choice. Fourth choice, paid $920 treasure hunting. And what was the other race that we looked at? You did have one decent price I saw. There it is, in the ninth, the anchor leg of the multis. You had Mr. Springtime pay $17, 15-2. Antonio Mraz with a mild enough upset to boost the pick five to $1,276. Nice. And the big four paid $414. So nice sequence yesterday at Horseshoe. Indianapolis, we move slightly west from Indy to Altoona, Iowa. Stu Slagle joins us, and things are about to get underway at Prairie Meadows. Stu, thanks for visiting.
Steve, anytime. I'm always happy to talk about horse racing, and horse racing when it's live. It's the best way to take it in, to enjoy the beautiful beasts running in front of us. And tomorrow night we start our 84-day season, and looking forward to a successful year. And it's my second go round at Prairie Meadows. I was here as a racing official, oh, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago, and I have an opportunity to come back to be racing secretary, so I'm happy to be back and happy to be here for this great season.
Well, and I didn't realize that you had been there years before.
The early in my career, I was here as an entry clerk and a placing judge. And
wow!
And racing's a small world, and opportunities often circle back on themselves, and you never know when you're going to be somewhere again.
I love it. Well, I was happy for you when this, you know, because you had done some, you know, you had a couple of years after leaving Woodbine, and you're kind of open to different opportunities. And so when you got this, I thought, wow, that's great. Be a good spot. Where'd you grow up? I don't even know your background.
I grew up a little bit everywhere. I was born in Ohio, and a trivia question that no one's going to remember after the show, but I was born in the same hospital as LeBron James and Steph Curry. But I don't know how to play basketball. From there, the family moved to Texas preteen years, and I grew up in West Texas in Lubbock, went to the University of Texas at Austin, and since then have bounced all over the country like any racetrack does. You take an opportunity to learn and grow, and you jump to meets when their schedules change and what you had no longer dovetails. So I've been enjoying the racing lifestyle for most of my adult life.
Very cool. Give us a feel, Stu, looking ahead to the meet, and how's your horse population? Give a few, give us a few looks ahead.
This is an interesting meet. We have a mixed meet, which is asymmetrical. We start off with the first 22 days or so are all thoroughbreds, and then the remaining 62 days of the meet are thoroughbred and quarter horse. The quarter horse move in late because of the schedule being the way it is. Right now we have 711 thoroughbreds on the ground. We're shooting for 930. People are still moving in. We have horses coming from Oaklawn, Bonner, Lone Star, Will Rogers Downs, various tracks in Louisiana, and they're all on their way. So we're looking good in terms of population. The shift in the calendar from last year to this year has been very beneficial for us. We're not overlapping with Oaklawn, so we can have we can get people here as soon as they can get here. And last year there was an overlap, so that made the start a little difficult. But we will have the barn full soon, and we have first week of races drawn. We start with a 6 o'clock post on Friday and Saturday, 4 o'clock post on Sunday and Monday. Those post times will occasionally be adjusted for events like the Preakness or whatever, so that we don't collide with other tracks. But for the most part, Friday and Saturday, 6 o'clock Central, and Sunday and Monday, 4 o'clock Central, and we go all the way through October 2nd.
Just looking at I got the first two cards. Give us a feel for the balance. You're using the Iowa bred program, kind of folded in nicely. You start things with talk about the stakes program too, and the Festival of Racing, the Iowa Festival of Racing, that is always a highlight of the meet. The Goldfinch kicks off the state calendar tomorrow night.
Now, the Goldfinch is a really exciting race. We have eight fillies in here, and it's a very an impressive bunch. We have horses coming from all over in the United States, last out in Houston, Sunland Park, Gulfstream, Oaklawn, at Surf Paradise, Delta Downs. So we're getting the horses coming from everywhere. We have notable trainers in here with the locals with Kelly Von Hemmel, with multiple winner and stakes winner from last year from Prairie Meadows, Demi Danu, will be in the race as well. And we have Steve Asmussen coming from Houston with the Horse Nate Speedometer. Rusty Arnold has entered, and we expect him to come with Muted from stabled at Keeneland, but has two wins for, at Gulfstream. So we're looking forward for this very nice opening night stakes. And it does, as you said, it kicks off our huge stakes program that we have, and we're very proud of it here. Last year, our top stakes, the Cornhusker, was won by the Horse of the Year, Nick Go. So we're excited to the challenge of living up to offering those kind of horses again for everybody. Our Iowa Festival of Racing is on July 8th and 9th. This year, we're adding two juvenile stakes to the menu, so we're going to end up with four stakes each night, and we're looking forward to that being a solid weekend as well. But this is the start of all good things for the season, and the Goldfinch is scheduled for 8:42 on Central Time on tomorrow night.
Stu, because I know you have been known to make a wager over the years, let's glance at the betting menu too, and get a feel for what players are going to be greeted with.
Let me see if I can pull up that spreadsheet real quick. We have most of the wagers that everybody is looking for. We do offer both Quinellas and Exactas. Some tracks just choose one or the other. We give people the opportunity to shop for what they're looking for. We have rolling doubles, rolling pick threes. We have pick fours, a pick five, and a jackpot high five in the last race. And it's a menu that most horse players would appreciate, and I think that definitely one I think fan friendly.
There you go. I do see that I'll mention that the pick five. I know the pick five, which is the last five of the night. That's a jackpot format, so you'll have to track that one. Late pick four, and there we go. I'm just. Yeah, there you go. That's pretty much the start of the pick four starts. Races one through four for an early pick four. And there you go. That's a
and we have
banner menu.
And yes, the jackpot super high five. We offered 20-cent wheels, pick five, 50-cent wheels, perfected. And pick fours, pick threes. We offer 50-cent part wheels as well. One place show takeout is 17%. It's a nice number, but people are looking for lower numbers. So pick fours at 15, jackpot pick five is at 15%, the jackpot for high five is at 15%. So, and fairly fan friendly menu, and
yeah,
it's you know, things. We may add things as the meet evolves. We're working on a couple possibilities of things to come that I can't talk about yet. But we're trying to offer what everybody's looking for. Everybody wants to have an opinion on a race, and they want to maximize it however they feel best suited to take our handle. So if it's a vertical wager, horizontal wager, we just want to make sure they're all available.
Nice. And Bobby Newman back for another year, second year?
Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to working with Bobby for the first time. I've actually never met him in person, but he's got a reputation of being a fun person and on top of being a great race caller. So I'm looking forward to the partnership.
Big time. Big time. You'll enjoy. Bobby does a great job, and he's got that. He's got a very familiar voice, and the Calder fans over the years will be pleased to have Bobby's voice back up on a signal for the season. And Prairie Meadows gets started tomorrow night, 6 o'clock Central Time, 7 o'clock, looking forward to it. I will certainly check in, Stu, with you and Bobby, and also got to look ahead to the Iowa Derby and the Iowa Festival of Racing and everything that comes with it. Altoona, Iowa, folks, if you're traveling the Midwest, certainly the locals love it. They got a nice on-track scene at Prairie Meadows. Stu Slagle, I appreciate it, and we'll catch up during the season.
Thank you, Steve. I look forward to chatting with you about our great races as the season goes along, and look forward to everybody join our product tomorrow night. Thank you.
Stu, not at all. Stu Slagle, everybody, and you should follow Stu, because when he's not busy, you know, as the racing secretary, he's got a lot of interest and does a lot of work with spreadsheet, with statistics, and he's offered up a lot of interesting things when just as part of his, you know, general tweeting persona. And he's got a great handle too. It's Ovals, O-V-A-L-S. Ovals is Stu Slagle. Prairie Meadows kicks off tomorrow. Let's take a break, exactly 1 hour in, and when we come back, Tony Black is going to join us. And Tony, of course, with some Derby observations. I'm curious, as I said with Mig on Tuesday, about what his view as a rider to see a journeyman like Sonny Leone come in and just stand it on its head, turn in and ride for the ages. Tony Black next, Joe Clancy coming, much more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Defining Rod by Tappan, Osler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
Hoistman, nominate now for the $400,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Oaks. Both races will be run Friday, June 3rd, each at 1 mile on the grass at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. Nominations close Wednesday, May 18th. Contact the Penn National Racing Office at 1-800-233-8238. That's 1-800-233-8238. Or go to hollywoodpnrc.com/racing.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org.